Welcome to Cityscape, a podcast from the Committee for Sydney. Philip Davies is the former Chief Executive of Infrastructure Australia. He sat down with Michael Rose, Chairman of the Committee for Sydney, who started off by asking about the plans of the new Cities and Population Minister, Alan Tudge, to moderate immigration into Australian cities.
So I think first and foremost, Michael, I personally, and I'm sure Infrastructure Australia would welcome the government's initiative to put population together with cities in the ministry for Minister Tudge. I think that's a good step forward. We were strong advocates at IA for the need for a national population policy and indeed a plan, and you know, latterly really changing the terminology to talk about settlement planning, because it's clear with such a high population level of population growth going on that we need the federal government to work closely with state and territory governments to plan where those people are going to live and work.
I suppose there's been a bit of an element in this discussion lately which, you know, suggesting that there's a binary equation between immigration and growth in the cities, and that if we are able to turn off the immigration tap, then the growth pains in our cities will disappear. Do you agree with that idea?
So growth isn't only from immigration, it's from natural births, but it's also from people living longer, which is something we don't often discuss. It's clear that population growth is driving our economy. We've had 26 years of uninterrupted economic growth. Again, at Infrastructure Australia, we certainly think that population growth is a good thing, but what we need to do is get the planning right, and I think that's this opportunity now presented to Minister Tudge to actually step back and look where do we want to accommodate this growth, and how can we take some of the pressure off our major capital cities, particularly Sydney and Melbourne right now, to accommodate that growth, and how can we give opportunities to smaller cities where we have good infrastructure, Adelaide, Canberra, you know, in terms of has great infrastructure but a much lower growth in population right now. How can we give them a fair go in getting some of that opportunity?
And how do you see the balance? You talk about planning being the important thing in terms of managing growth and population growth. How do you think the balance is at the moment between the task as it's undertaken by the federal government and the task undertaken by the state governments? Is there more for the federal government to do? Are the state governments doing all that they can?
I think generally speaking, it's fair to say that state and territory governments are responding to growth. I think that's particularly evident in Sydney, where we've had a long period of time without decent planning, without investment. This state government in Sydney is investing a lot in planning and has set up the Greater Sydney Commission, which is a good step forward to integrate the planning, but also is investing an unprecedented amount in infrastructure. It's really playing catch up though, it's responding to growth. That growth continues. It's hard whilst you're responding to growth to get on the front foot in terms of planning for future growth. I think Greater Sydney Commission is doing that largely towards Western Sydney, which is a good thing, but there's more that the federal government should be doing. I think, you know, that's a message I've heard loud and clear from state governments. You know, we welcome the federal government coming and sitting around the table with us. And I think the other aspect of this is there's a very important role for local government. And I think Western Sydney in particular is a good example where the City Deals initiative from the federal government has brought three tiers of government together, eight local councils. That's got to be a good thing. But we need to embed that governance now so that it can transcend changes in local politicians and state politicians and indeed federal politicians. Yeah. It's important we hold them accountable to put the frameworks in place so that lasts through the next 20, 30 years.
So let's turn now to your tenure at Infrastructure Australia. A couple of very significant things happened under your leadership. One was the Australian Infrastructure Audit, and the other was the publication of the Australian Infrastructure Plan. Has the plan landed in the way that you would have liked it to have landed, and is it influencing decisions in the way you would have liked?
So I think the last 3.5 years have been quite instrumental in setting a new way of the federal government working with state governments in planning and delivering infrastructure. The fundamental change, I think, was establishing Infrastructure Australia as an independent body. And in fact, there's no politicians, there's no federal bureaucrats on the board. It's a big board, 12 people, represents the country pretty well, and also the public and private sector and academia. So fairly balanced board. It's independent, so the work can stand up to the test of time. And I think the most important thing after that is the evidence base of an audit. So doing regular audits is important, because that gives you the evidence to go and have a conversation with people. And I think one of the achievements I'm most proud about is the depth and quality of the relationships we've built with our state and territory colleagues around the country. Through that, we've developed a 15-year plan, which sets out the planning reforms and the market reforms that we need to see across the infrastructure sectors over the next 15 or so years. I think that's absolutely fundamental. I think on top of that, we released a number of reform papers which took some of those recommendations from the plan and actually demonstrated how to deliver those reforms. Most of them have to be delivered by state governments, but we also gave the federal government some mechanisms to incentivize those reforms and put dollars against them, so the size of the prize was quite evident. So I think really pleased with the quality of the work and the depth of the work that we've put out there. It's a difficult political environment for reforms, I think it's fair to say, but a number of those recommendations are being moved forward, which is good to see.
One of the reforms that you've spoken about a lot and which you've spoken with the committee's members about on different occasions is a need to look again at the methodology around infrastructure appraisal and to sharpen up our game in relation to that. I wanted to say a bit more about that and perhaps give us a sense of where you think things are at the moment.
So I think, again, a lot of good work, collaborative work's been done around the country over the last probably 18 to 24 months. It's clear that the quality of business cases that Infrastructure Australia is receiving is dramatically improved, and indeed IA's been very proactive in that respect by going around the country running training workshops with consultants and bureaucrats, which has really driven up the standard of business cases. The appraisal process itself has been updated annually over the last couple of years to really raise the bar in terms of the sophistication of the cost benefit analysis, but also the strategic approach. And I think that's been very necessary, because in the kind of most recent past, we saw a lot of roads projects, and quite honestly, it's quite easy to do a cost benefit analysis for a road. Pretty straightforward, they stack up pretty well. So the quality of the economic analysis is pretty ordinary in a lot of cases. Now we're moving to more complex transport systems, metro systems and so on, and also starting to look at healthcare and education facilities. The economics takes on a different dimension, so it's been really appropriate to make that whole process more sophisticated. But fundamentally, the appraisal system is still using cost-benefit analysis at its core, but I think is supplemented now by a much more sophisticated approach to the strategic benefits, long-term strategic benefits to some of these investments. Still more work to do, but I think it's been a very good collaboration between Infrastructure Australia and particularly the infrastructure bodies that most governments are now either setting up or have set up around the country.
And you think they are starting to make that journey from city servicing infrastructure to city shaping infrastructure and really getting more thoughtful around the prioritisation of projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good to describe it as a journey, as you did. It is a journey. I think the only hesitation I've got, and you can tell I'm hesitating, the only hesitation I've got is really that when governments are approaching elections, there's a tendency to make announcements around infrastructure. I think one of the challenges we have with infrastructure is is often it's used as a point of differentiation between political parties, and I think that's unfortunate. One of the things we strongly call for in Infrastructure Australia was being clear around what's the problem we're trying to solve, presenting the evidence of that problem to the community, and then engaging them through the different options to solve the problem. I think we need to see more of that, but we will inevitably always have political announcements. And I think, you know, having one of the probably the greatest achievements of Infrastructure Australia over the last 3 years was institutionalizing an infrastructure priority list, evidence-based, developing consensus with state and territory governments. It provides a menu to the federal government to actually select its investments. It was good to see in the May budget, federal May budget, that the vast majority, over 80% of the announcements, were from the menu.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as I'm leaving Infrastructure Australia, that's a great legacy, I think, to have. But now we need the community and groups like the Committee for Sydney to actually start holding governments accountable. You know, if we see announcements that aren't on the list, I think we need to call it out and say, why are we not working off the priority list? That's why it's there. So, yeah, I think hopefully we'll see more maturity from politicians going forward and a greater consensus. You know, it's ironic because they make a point of difference around choosing different projects, but at the end of the day, a lot of these projects are so complex and long-term, none of them ever get to cut the ribbon anyway. So
yes, yeah.
I think, you know, hopefully we'll see a great improvement there.
So let's just pick up that point you just made about now it's the job of the community and organisations like the committee to start holding government to the menu, to the plan. You've been vocal in the past about what you've seen as an absence of corporate Australia from a lot of the discussion around infrastructure planning and broader economic policy. Has that changed at all over the last 3 years? Is it still an issue? And what are your suggestions on how that might be changed?
I'd like to say it has changed, but I'm not sure it has. I think it's a difficult world right now for politicians, and it's not just a challenge in Australia, it's a global phenomenon, and populism seems to be leading the charge, and I think there's a void being left where I think it's important that business groups, including the Committee for Sydney, actually represent business with a stronger voice to government, to call government out when they're perhaps not making the right choices, but equally to back government when they are doing good things. And there seems to be a complete lack of support of government or criticism of government right now. I think everyone's kind of just focusing on their own jobs and their own businesses, which is quite right. But I think we do need business to step up, and we need some leadership from the business sector. I think the other interesting thing, reflection, is we do have a very complex governance system in Australia with the Federation and three tiers of government, particularly with only a small population, 25 million people. I think there's a greater role for local government to play, and I think, again, going back to the city deal concept, particularly in Western Sydney, you know, it's good to see 8 local councils stepping up there and actually providing leadership. You know, in a way, local government actually has probably right now a stronger bond and relationship with the community than some state governments and federal members. So I think there is a critical role for local government to play.
So what's next for you now?
Yeah, so it's been a very challenging and rewarding time at Infrastructure Australia. I'm very, very proud of the work that the team's done, and I'm grateful to the board for supporting the team with you know, some of the great products and achievements we've had. I'm keen to take some of that forward in a different capacity. I'd like to deliver some of the reforms, and I'm very passionate around the need for national freight and supply chain strategy. Indeed, I've been a leading advocate for that. That was one of IA's recommendations in the 2015 plan. And I'm pleased to say the federal government's taking that forward. So I'm going to continue an involvement in that through taking on the chair role of the Australian Logistics Council, which I'm very pleased and honoured to do, That organisation represents all the big players in freight and logistics and supply chains, and some of the big retailers as well, like Coles and Woolies. So very pleased to be asked to chair that organisation and continue my role in that sector. Also very pleased to accept a role with taking on the University of Wollongong Smart Infrastructure Advisory Council, which is a very eminent group that provides advice and direction to the smart infrastructure facility in Wollongong University, which is still relatively new, but is kicking goals, and you know, we look forward to expanding on that and actually getting, you know, primarily driving two of my other passions: one, a greater use of technology and getting more out of existing infrastructure, but also using data analytics to actually drive higher performance and efficiency through supply chains and everywhere else. And then they're part-time roles, obviously, and then my substantive role is joining Deloitte as a partner next week, where again I used to work for Deloitte in the late 90s. I'm looking forward to driving forward reforms with Deloitte's clients and actually building on some of the things I've learned over the last 3.5 years in Infrastructure Australia.
So Phil, you've been a great friend and supporter of the Committee for Sydney in your time at Infrastructure Australia. The University of Wollongong and Deloitte are both members of the Committee for Sydney, so we'll be looking forward to seeing you back at our events and to spending more time with you. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Michael.